This is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio. We've got another great show today. I want to give people a little update. I guess over in Indiana and Michigan, they're having some really high radiation levels, so you might want to not be outdoors, and might be a good time to stay indoors and be sure and wash everything, you know, if you are growing anything outside, and before you bring it in. And they're having tomato-sized hail, you know, east and west and north and south is coming down everywhere. That's a little interesting. We've gone through a solar eclipse, a lunar eclipse, and a Venus transit. And we've got CMEs and solar flares just slamming in the magnetosphere. So, you know, it's there's a lot going on. And we're actually coming into alignment with Alcyon and with the galactic plane. We're moving into a new highly energized place in space. So basically, if you've been feeling a little funky lately, you know, there's good cause, especially with these major sun flares that are hitting the planet. It's making people a little dizzy and nauseated and giving people headaches. And some people are getting a little irritable and having mood swings or just wanting to sleep, you know, in general. So it's just the body adjusting to the new energies. And so, you know, you may not have to run to the doctor right away, but you might want to watch the SOHO site and see if we're getting hit by a major sun flare, you know, to see what's going on. Here at ESETI, we've got ships flying like crazy again. We saw four really nice ones with a couple power-ups last night. And, you know, some other smaller ones up high that, you know, we don't even count, you know, unless they come down and do something that makes it very well known who they are. There's just a lot of things going on right now. But start paying attention and start watching the skies. I highly recommend checking into Dutch Sense. You know, just type in, Google it, Dutch Sense, if you want updates, and Suspicious Observer. Both these guys are right on top of what's happening with weather, earthquakes, everything around the planet. So, you know, it's time to be informed. I know Senator Lee just ushered in a blistering, you know, I guess if you type in Senator Lee on Google, you'll get it, where he just rips on the present administration concerning their track record and the Constitution and the oaths that they've taken. So that's another good one. Ron Paul seems to have a few supporters out there that are also stepping up to the plate now and just making it very clear that there are a lot of illegal and unlawful actions moves, you know, being taken by the present administration and the last administration as well that have usurped the Constitution and our basic human rights. So, but anyway, it's time for us to wake up and get behind those movements as well, you know, and support these guys in standing up for us. There's so many things going on. We have, we had the blessing of Gary Evans that came and did a wonderful talk on Egypt. And he does tours, you know, over to the megalithic sites and sacred sites around the world. And we'll have him come on the air and talk about this. We just watched a presentation, and it was just mind-blowing. And finally, there was a focus on the spiritual effects and the energetic effects of these sacred sites and how they affect the body. And you know, not just a lot of pictures and the see me, dig me pictures, I was there, look at me. You know, it's more of a spiritual approach. So we're going to bring Gary on the show to talk about some of these experiences and see if we can hook up with Gary. Gary, are you with us?
I'm here, James. Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, great to have you on the show. You know, that was just an incredible presentation. And
thank you.
We can get to some of the saw highlights later. But first, you know, the best way, I know you have some, do you have some tours coming up soon? I think you have some tours coming up right around the corner, don't you?
Yeah, well, I'm working on a lot of tours, 20 in total at the moment. The next one that I know I'm going to be on at the moment is with Robert Bavall. I help him organize his tours in Egypt, and that'll be in October. And then I'm going to be co-hosting a number of tours in 2013. Around the UK, Ireland, Egypt, Malta, Turkey, possibly China even, the Chinese pyramid.
Yeah, well, that would be awesome because from what I hear, it's very hard to get into the Chinese pyramids. Not very many people have been there.
Yes, by the sounds of it, we're not actually going to be able to get inside the pyramids, but we'll at least be able to walk around the outside and get a sense of them. Mm-hmm. So that's probably the best we're going to accomplish at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, well, even getting that far, from what I understand, is quite an accomplishment. I don't know where you want to go first, but one thing I was fascinated by is the the technology of the pyramids, and not just the, oh God, the awakening and healing technology, but there seems to be some other higher physics going on there with water and quite a few other things. I'd love for you to touch on that if you can.
Yeah, sure. Well, one thing that becomes clear once you get to see a bit more than the normal tourist sort of pattern of movement in Egypt is there does seem to be a lot of connections with water around the pyramids. I've certainly seen a lot around the Giza Plateau. We've got shafts going downwards, and we know that the water table was higher. The Nile, even early in the sort of 20th century, until they built the Aswan Dam, came up to very close to the base of the Sphinx. Mm-hmm. So we know that the whole area had underground water. And so these shafts seem to go down to that kind of level. So there's been sort of recent theories that there was some kind of interaction with water and pyramids. And when you start visiting the various sites, you start seeing the same pattern of deep holes that are cut down into a very low level, shafts running underneath. And it's also something that we can see happening at English megalithic sites. There seems to be water in the vicinity. Megalithic sites are built near what they call Winterbourne Springs. So if I had to make a guess at this stage with what we know, I would say that they were somehow harnessing water and perhaps creating an energy from running water, which is, there's been some testing done on that kind of aspect of it. And then what we looked at in the presentation was, is there a combination with a kind of crystal technology in combination with water? And that seems to be an area that my research is growing in recently.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've worked with some physicists that were creating structured water, and they actually crystallize oxygen and suspend it in a microhydrant. And it's just amazing the healing technologies that they were working with. And in order to do that, it took some very high electronics, you might say, to do that, mm-hmm. to actually create that type of system. But I'm sure it can be done naturally. And I've heard all kinds of stories about running water over crystalline structures and swirling water, and especially basalt, how it totally changes the nature of the water. And it seems like they were doing all kinds of things with water, not just, they might have even been generating energy with it, but obviously they're creating some healing waters there as well. It's what it looks like to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's the kind of, you could say, epiphany that I had when I could see that they had running water flowing around the temples because we've been following these channels. And the only sort of logical conclusion you could come to is there's water. I mean, that's what we would use these kind of channels for today. So you've got running water, and then you've got crystal, and you've got these crystal basins at one of the sites that's not too far from Giza. And in these crystal basins, you've got a round drill hole towards the top of the basin. And when you look at it, it does really say water was coming through these holes, because it's almost like a sort of fountain or something that we would use today. So things like you've got running water, crystal basins. So it's not unreasonable to ask the question, well, if they were using water in conjunction with crystal, what was the outcome that they were trying to achieve? And so that was the kind of question I had in my mind. And the answer that came in was that they were trying to charge the water, perhaps not this site I was looking at, but there was some kind of water charging technology that allowed them to have a stronger life force running through them, or stronger connection to their soul. So that's my current mode of thinking.
Yeah, I know this crystallized oxygen water. It's like prana in a bottle, and when you drink it, your mind opens up. You know, it goes after any virus or bacteria in your body, and it actually goes up against cancer because cancer is anaerobic. So if you increase the blood oxygen and raise the pH, it takes care of all kinds of things. And it seems like they were taking it maybe even a step further to where they were actually infusing or charging the water with pyramid energy or some other life force energy, which seems to have both, very high mental and emotional effects, spiritual effects as well, and probably healing aspects to it, on top of that.
Well, I mean, if we look at it just from a logical point of view, the scientists say we're 70-80% water. Mm-hmm. So wouldn't we want that water to be the best that it could possibly be? I mean, that seems to make a logical sense to me. And people, I think that were a bit more in touch with themselves, might well come to the same conclusion and put some of their great minds into thinking about solutions to this problem. And it doesn't have to be, as you said, an overcomplicated technical solution. There might just be in natural ways. There's certainly different qualities of water around this planet. Perhaps they found something that had an effect on them and then tried to recreate it. That's quite feasible in my mind.
Yeah, it definitely looks like that. I know Victor Schauberger's work. I was watching a bunch of old videos and what he was doing with water and even air, just air with sacred geometry was just phenomenal and generating just incredible amounts of torque and energy and it seems like our ancient ancestors understood all these principles and utilized these principles and seemed to be a lot further advanced than we are now. I mean, obviously we actually devolved. We're probably just now starting to evolve back to where they once were or close to it.
It certainly looks that way. Yeah, I'd be comfortable with that viewpoint.
From what I understand, we can't even move blocks, some of the blocks, the size of those blocks today, some of our biggest cranes couldn't even move those blocks. And so, and actually get them into place where they're supposed to be, and they seem to be like passing those things around, moving them 500 miles and just dropping them off wherever they wanted to.
Yeah, it certainly seems that way. Yeah, I think the kind of modern cranes can pick up the weight, which goes to the 1,000 tons we've got in Egypt. But actually manoeuvring them into position is where the engineers have said they'd have the trouble, particularly in the conditions, sand that's out in Egypt. I think it would certainly be, even if we just threw all the money at it to recreate the Great Pyramid today, would probably be difficult with that precision of engineering.
I know. It's the whole base of that is, I can't remember what the degree it is off, but it's like hardly anything. It's almost perfectly level. And a lot of contractors talk about that and they go, boy, there's no way I could get that, to that degree now, and you really think about it, the reason might be off a little bit just because of earth changes, because it probably was perfectly level.
Yeah, I think they've sort of measured it a couple of inches over the entire length of the structure, which is just incredible. We don't build buildings to that fine a tolerance today, so the engineers have a certain tolerance to build to these days, and because there's no reason to be that exact to the standards they were building to in ancient Egypt, they don't build to that standard. But if there's something, if there's a reason to have something so exact, and that's what we really, the question we've got to look at, why is it that it needed to be so precisely constructed? Is there something else going on in the structure?
Yeah, have you ever seen that object? They call it like the tool of the architect or something, and it's I can't remember exactly. I think it looks like almost looks like a ram's head or something on this other deal. And I guess there's a lot of legends back about this tool, I guess, that they could move rocks with, probably cut them. I don't know. It seemed to have all these crazy capabilities.
I haven't heard of the tool of the architect, but there is an early report from one of the very early historians back sort of near the time of Christ, where they was a report of having this sort of magic sheet of paper that they put under the block, and then they hit the blocks of stone with a metal rod of some description, and then the blocks levitated and moved along across this sheet. And then they moved the sheet and repeated the process. So I thought that was quite an interesting account.
Yeah, maybe it was a magic carpet or something. Who knows? Yeah, I read this one account, and I don't know if it could be verified, but they actually had a picture of this tool and in ancient times and what it looked like. But, you know, they didn't know what it was. But I guess... you know, it'd probably be fair to say, I mean, there's a lot of theories. Some people say that the pyramids were poured, you know, like cement. I don't believe in that one.
No, but, I don't believe in that either.
Yeah. But what's your theory on it after your research? Do you think they were either cut with lasers and moved with sound or some other extremely high technology?
Well, it's something that we puzzle on when we're normally looking at the pyramids in Egypt. The poured solution, I think it was Davidovich, was the guy that came up with that. Well, first of all, we've got quarries, and we've got cutouts for blocks.
Yeah.
And, of course, the argument for that is that they were cutting them out as blocks and then breaking them into dust and then reforming it in position. That's their sort of counter-argument. But when I'm looking at the Great Pyramid, if I'm using some kind of mold system, I'm expecting to see some consistency across the blocks, because you're not going to have 1,000 different shaped molds. I wouldn't have thought so. It doesn't seem to be a logical conclusion. So when you look at the Great Pyramid, all of the blocks are just very irregular.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't really say mold to me. And then we've got the quarry in Aswan, where the giant unfinished so-called obelisk is sitting. So we know that they're quarrying these things out as the finished item, and the granite in the Aswan quarry is much heavier than the limestone blocks that they were carving the pyramid for. So in my mind, the poured idea isn't a solution. So somehow they had an easier way of moving the blocks into place, which is, of course, leads to the idea that somehow it was easier for them to move blocks than it is for us today. And then you kind of open up a can of worms to the possibilities. Have I seen any evidence for anything other than manpower? At the moment, no. But some of the theories I've heard is that perhaps there was a slightly reduced gravity, so things weren't quite so hard to move around. There does seem to be a few clues that point us in the direction that they could kind of soften rock, maybe not quite to the liquid state that we're pouring, but maybe just making it somehow kind of having an anti-gravity effect, which would make them easier to move. Well, that's an interesting line of thought. And then if you're looking at it from a sound perspective, which Egypt does seem to speak to, that's where my talk went today. So perhaps there was a resonance or a sound effect that they certainly could have on granite with the high crystalline structure inside it. Well, that's an interesting line of thought that I'm certainly open to, but we definitely need some more evidence for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now I know that... I think the Hutchinson effect, he's shown that with sound, he could levitate you know, bowling balls and big lumps of lead and actually mm-hmm. change, you know, reconfigure them and you know, actually totally change the nature of them or the, you know, go from a solid to a liquid, all these different things. So, you know, it seems like it has been proven that that's possible, you know, but, you know, there's not these giant capacitors laying around and other things that he's using, you know, to, or generators to do it. But it just seems like they were way ahead of us where we're using these big giant machines to do things. They probably knew how to do it naturally or even spiritually, who knows?
Yes, well, this is kind of where the levels of consciousness comes into it, because the kind of left brain analytical mode of consciousness that is basically revered across the business world, you could say, isn't the only way of solving problems. Mm-hmm. And certainly from the insights that I've gained in Egypt, you can get to a state of consciousness where there's a knowing. There's a knowing of how the world works and a way of interacting with the world in a more harmonious way that doesn't involve us destroying the natural environment. And so there could be simpler solutions that we will get to accomplish a lot of the same things that we were doing with brute force today. Mm-hmm. That's kind of where I'm getting to.
Yeah. Now, one thing that actually, you know, we're having our experiences here with these interdimensional beings or higher dimensional beings. And, you know, it does seem like my own near-death experience was very similar to what you experienced there in Egypt, where you blast off into that plane of bliss. But definitely. One of the things I was fascinated by is that you're talking about, like, the statues of Sekhmet and things like that, which are supposed to be people see them as these huge guards, you know, or sentinels sitting before these temples, but they're all smiling and they have this incredible sense of peace on their face or almost that smile of knowingness or enlightenment.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought I'd bring that up because I hadn't really, it's something that we discussed when we're looking at them, because all of the statues in Egypt are just so serene looking. And I thought the best example, which is at Abu Simbel, where you've got these statues that are sort of, probably sort of 30 to 35 feet tall. And this was supposed to be the original entrance to Egypt. And with the perspective that we're told about from archaeologists and Egyptologists, I would logically thinking that these would be quite sort of menacing statues that perhaps might want to put fear into people that are entering the land, but they're sitting in a seated pose with their hands on their legs, and they've got this beautiful kind of serene expression on their face, and if anything, it looks like they're meditating. So it's definitely a very gentle welcome to Egypt. That's more of what they say. And, I mean, the statues in general are just very interesting, across the length of Egypt. When you look at the expressions, they're all very serene. The artwork throughout the temples, I mean, we've got some amazing scenes that I was showing photographs of earlier. And if people did, anyone that sort of does Reiki healing or energy healing with their hands or anything, if you look at these photographs, it just looks like they're sort of sharing and trying to uplift each other into a better state of consciousness or mind. So, yeah, it's a very different experience to the picture that's given to us in the history books when you're there on the ground.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looks like they're doing some kind of energy transmissions or, like you're saying, Reiki or initiations, you know, in the pictures and the statues as well. You know, it's just, I think if you go there, I think you're mentioning that, you know, if you go there as a tourist and you just want to take a bunch of pictures, you know, with and say, hey, see me, I was here, you know, or buy the T-shirt, you know. You know, whatever, you're not going to figure out what's going on. But if you go there with the spiritual on a spiritual journey, and you go there with an open mind and a loving heart, and really tune into the energy and be respectful of what's going on there, you can have just incredible experiences.
Definitely, which I've been very fortunate to share with a lot of our guests on the tours. And when you share those kind of experiences with people, they become friends for life. I'm going to be stopping off in New York to see a couple that I've shared experiences with on my way back to England in a couple of days' time. But the main thing about Egypt, I think it's always been a place, certainly in the last 4,000 to 5,000 years at least, where people went seeking answers to some of the big spiritual questions in life. And before I went there, I was under the impression that perhaps those days had gone, and that it was a kind of inanimate experience where we would just get some photographs. But like many of these sites that I've been visiting, a lot of them are still very active, and Egypt is in such a well-preserved state compared to a lot of the other ancient sites around the world. But it's still a place that we can go. Perhaps we'd want to do some soul searching. I mean, we get a lot of people that are coming on the tours that have kind of got a deeper wish to do something from the heart, but they don't know how to follow their heart and earn money to survive. So we get a lot of those people coming there. And from what I've certainly experienced, Egypt's capable of giving us some answers. It doesn't call everybody. I'm fully aware that some people don't get called to Egypt, but perhaps there are other ancient sites or places of power where consciousness is, which is another aspect we touched on today, that consciousness across the planet isn't the same. There's places like your ranch where there's a higher vibration or a higher state of consciousness we can get to if we've worked on ourselves, done some self-development. And Egypt's certainly one of those places where our awareness can expand to a greater place.
One of the things I'd love to do here, I've had this dream of mine, is out in this front field of dreams where all the orbs and all the other photographs of masters and beings appearing have been taken. I would just love to do a nice little step pyramid out there basically a landing pad for the return of our ancient ancestors.
Well, that sounds like a good idea. Yeah, step pyramids and ziggurats, which is the ones that were used in South America, Mesopotamia and things. So they're actually the sort of most well-known version of a pyramid, even though they're not a true pyramid.
Yeah. I've always looked at that and I just said, wow, you know, those look like landing pads, you know. And then you go the indigenous people and you go and you ask them, you know, who built these structures, and they always point at the sky and they say the gods, you know, the gods built them. And then they say, you know, they're waiting for the gods to return. This is where they're going to return. And you really think about it, these things are flat on the top. They have stairs going all the way down. They definitely look like landing pads for a very large craft.
It's certainly a possibility that I wouldn't close my mind off to. I think that we've got a lot of questions around pyramids, and they're even building, you could say, pyramid-shaped mounds in England and things. Mm-hmm. What do these symbols represent for the ancient mind? And there's certainly a cultural memory of people that have come from somewhere and spread this wisdom. That's the common story in South America, that fair-skinned people turned up and spread sort of culture and wisdom around. But so there seems to be a sort of genetic memory almost globally.
Yeah, there definitely does. Have you been over to Bosnia yet, or?
No, I haven't made it to the Bosnian pyramids. a group of my friends went over there last year, and it's on my list. Yeah, because I know Samir, who's credited with their discovery, so I'm sure I'd get a nice tour around, make my mind up about them.
Well, yeah.
When time allows. Uh-huh. It certainly seems to be a sort of fuzzy subject at the moment. There's a lot of people going over there.
Yeah. I know some scientific, we had Dr. Sam on here. I'm not even going to try to say his last name. I'm sure I'll screw it up. It's like Mononovich
or something.
Anyway, we've had him on the show, and he was talking about how there's these waves of energy coming off the top of that pyramid that actually exponentially increase the further they get away from the pyramid. Like any kind of a flashlight or laser, anything you shoot a beam off with, it starts decreasing the further away it gets away from its source. But he said these beams coming off this pyramid are actually exponentially getting stronger, which is some kind of like scalar technology where they just build upon themselves, and they're taking all these incredible measurements on the inside. And he says there's absolutely no negative or aging energies on the inside of these pyramids. If you probably lived in here, you'd probably live to be 1,000 years old if you decided to take up residence and not come out, you know. But
in the tunnels underneath.
Yeah. So it's quite interesting the what they're coming up with and the information they're coming up with. And, you know, it might be, he was saying it's almost like it's a huge healing chamber as well, that people, come out of there just invigorated and feel great.
Well, that's certainly what we've been experiencing in Egypt. I mean, I did mention it quite a few times today. If nothing else, when we visit these ancient sites, we feel our spirit lifted. Or normally, if I'm going into the Great Pyramid, I would certainly say I come out feeling happier.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be down to the effects of the sound on the body, because there certainly seem to have a sound healing effect. The King's Chamber is very resonant with sound. I've had some incredible experiences in there. And many megalithic sites, because that's where we run the tours, to these ancient megalithic sites that have got. And crystal is kind of at the root of it. Because looking at them, it looks like the crystalline structure of the rock allows for resonance. And so I'm quite open to the possibility of ancient sites. Not all of them, but a lot of them, either physical healing effects, healing of consciousness, sort of uplifting the soul to allow for a clearer way forward in our path. It just depends really what we're going to these sites for. We have lots of different people joining us for different reasons, but the kind of common theme is they've got some big questions about life. What's it all about? We're not getting answers from the academics. They're just kind of approaching things from a very dull perspective. I think life's a bit more exciting than the general picture that's painted to us. And it really does come alive when you're able to travel, meet like-minded people, share stories. Life gets a lot more exciting. So I think I've been fortunate to be able to share my journey with so many like-minded souls recently.
Well, it just seems, I don't see how you can stand in front of those monuments or those just massive statues and look at them and just ask yourself, who did this, and how did they do it? And if these are my ancestors, who am I?
Well, John Anthony West is a good guy that talks about the difference in perspective in ancient Egypt to the modern day, where we're kind of putting our best minds to work on nuclear bombs and the latest gadgets to sell. But in ancient Egypt, it looks like their greatest minds were being put to work on, is there, their belief was that there was life after death. reincarnation was a concept they were happy with. So they were trying to figure out the mysteries of what happened after this incarnation. And a lot of their minds are put onto work of sculpture and art. And this is art. I mean, just mind-blowing, some of these statues. Some of the biggest ones are 1,000 tons, which is probably at least 2 or 3 railroad car kind of weight. And the detail of the anatomy is just superb. It's not just like a crude arm that they depict, even at 1,000 tons. You've got the knuckle joints, and you can see all the definitions of the muscles rippling, and it's just uncanny. So they've certainly gone to a lot of effort for some reason, and it seems, by our standards, extra ordinary. Did they know something that we still don't? Quite possibly.
I think one of the things I'm totally fascinated with is these feline beings like Sekhmet and or lion beings. And I noticed that there's some interesting things going on. One, you know, they're all throughout history. Even in ancient India, they called them Narsringa, which were the benevolent protectors. And they used to, you know, if a village was in trouble and bandits were coming in, they would start praying to Narsringa. And then all of a sudden the bandits would just be knocked off their horses and wouldn't even see who was doing it to them. And they'd get on their horses and ride off, you know, their clothing would get torn. And so that's, I thought that was quite interesting, one aspect of that. But the other fun thing I find fascinating is that over in, Australia, Mary Rodwell's work, she has all of these contactees that are actually being contacted by these feline beings that seem to be returning. And they're having contact with ones that look kind of like cat-like, you know, humanoid cat, more human than cat. But you can tell they're feline. And then some that look more like a panther at 12 to 14 feet tall, which we've had Buddhist monks actually film here that have appeared here at the ranch. And then there's these seventh dimensional ones that are actually an upright lion that are huge. You know, they're 17 feet tall. They're very big. So these contacts are happening around the world. And I know there was an airport, and I believe it was over in Russia, that was being shut down with the appearance of this ship. And they could hear over the tower there. This huge UFO was flying over the airport there, and they could hear these cat voices. And they said it sounded like a female cat trying to talk to them in a language they didn't understand.
Wow.
And it really freaked them out. So, you know, there's all this is starting to tie together and starting to make sense. It seems like history is about ready to repeat itself, and these ancient ancestors and guides are returning to the earth, and it's just going to be interesting how people adjust to this or even accept it.
Yes, and what kind of form that they take, because what I did for the presentation today was I spoke to quite a few people that have had experiences with Sekhmet, because we had a group experience with this special statue that's at Karnak Temple. And I mean, that kind of expanded my version of reality, when you can have an experience with something that I thought was inanimate, and from the experience that we shared, perhaps not as inanimate as we thought originally. So then I thought, well, have other people had similar experiences? And well, it actually turns out that this spot in Karnak Temple is a well-known place that people of a kind of, you could say, a like-minded group of people regularly go there. And lots of people that I know have had what we would call strange experiences, perhaps visualizations of some kind of a manifestation of a feline woman coming to them in there. One lady told me their group felt like they were changed into a pack of lions, and they started acting accordingly. And there's even reports of these statues being so powerful that even when they're moved from the temples, that sometimes statues move about in museums. People have experiences in the museum. One of the kind of common things is when someone looks into the eyes of the statue, they kind of get transfixed and report a kind of telepathic communication. So the reality might be a bit stranger than we've been led to believe is where the evidence is starting to point.
Mm-hmm. You might want to let people know that the only person stoned in that room was the statue, you know, so they don't,
yeah.
So don't think
yeah,
you're on drugs or something.
As far as I'm aware, no one was using any substances they shouldn't be, or any kind of enhancing, apart from working on themselves to get to a state of consciousness. Because what the kind of common theme amongst all of these accounts is that it's a very benevolent entity that they feel connected to, that's kind of giving them a message that perhaps they're thinking about, or they're trying to work out what they want to do with their life. It always seems to be these kind of themes. Sometimes healing happens. A lady sent me an email just a couple of days ago reporting a kind of a spontaneous healing after coming in contact. So this entity, or the feline kind of presence, seems to be a force for good. And I think we all like cats, so that's good news.
Yeah, definitely. I know my own encounter. I was out of body. I was doing a meditation, and the next thing I know, I was out of body, and I was actually on a ship. And I saw all these different beings on this ship, and beings that were definitely human, and some were human but not from here. You know, they were definitely different.
Right.
But the weirdest thing I saw was, I saw the back of this being, and she had long blonde hair, you know, very beautiful, very, very beautiful figure. And, even in even in the spiritual world, you know, you admire beauty and everything. And I was looking at her, I go, wow, she's beautiful. And then she stood up and turned around and ran up and just gave me this big hug. And it was transforming. It was just so incredible. And I didn't even have a chance to react to the fact that she was a feline. She was a humanoid feline being. And you know, I was shown that they are working on our behalf, and they're doing all they can to assist us in this transition and the awakening healing process that the Earth is undergoing. But, that just blew me away, you know, because little by little, I've had to let go of all these old programs and old belief systems. When these things first started happening to me, you know, I go, hey, I'm talking to Jesus, and that's it. I mean, everybody else are spooks, and I don't know who you are, you know. And so I did have contacts, you know, after the near-death experiences, and I was very connected with Mary even as a kid. But they started introducing me to, you know, Baba G, and I had to study Eastern thought, and then they showed me Native American traditions I need to get involved in, and then I studied with Tibetan masters, and they told me I needed to really round out my knowledge concerning all the different practices and faiths.
Yeah.
And eventually I just realized, eventually you have to transcend all religious and cultural boundaries and see everything, you know, the creator within all creation, and get beyond all these other programs. And after doing that, boy, it was a wild ride after that. I've seen things that I don't know, I wouldn't even tell most people, you know, because they couldn't handle it. But I've seen things. I really had a crash course in learning how to heal unseen negative influences and set boundaries and remain in my own self-authority at the same time. So it was both a blessing and a challenge at the same time.
Yeah, that's certainly the learning experiences when we get, you know, different energies that cross our path. We can only do what we can, and I'm certainly pushing things in the Tibetan and more Eastern direction, because it's what I've been learning in yoga and meditation. Those teachings opened up Egypt to me, and I think that's possibly certainly given me a unique perspective on things to use that kind of teachings and just surveying what's happened to the ancient world around the planet, the hieroglyphic knowledge. We've had an interpretation of it, you could say, or a translation. But even just looking at it literally, that's the kind of interpretation we've got. I think it's given us a very cold understanding of what the hieroglyphics were conveying. There's more layers that were for the initiates, and probably different levels of initiates could understand more. And that's the kind of knowledge that we're still lacking full access mm-hmm. to. And then there was the whole wisdom tradition that was in the South America, which unfortunately we know from accounts pretty much was wiped out. But we must look to India and Tibet, in my mind, for knowledge, because it has survived there, perhaps not as much as it originally was, but there's still a lot available to those on the path that resonate in that direction. And I would certainly encourage people to look into mantras and meditation if you're not already. I expect most of your listeners already have some kind of practice. Mm-hmm. And really, what was going on in Egypt, I didn't actually mention it in the talk today, but the link I'd made was that the stories that come to us say that the Druids studied for 20 years. That was their sort of system of knowledge. When the Greeks went to Egypt, they were sent away to study for 20 years. And I thought, well, 20 years, that's a long time of studying. What were they studying for 20 years to get themselves into a, you could say, state of consciousness to be ready for the higher teachings of Egypt? And I think what they were having to learn was how the natural world works, how the insects interact with nature, how the animals are interacting, what they're doing with their lives, and all the kind of different aspects, so that you have an understanding of how the world at large works. And that's really what we've cut ourselves off to by sitting in offices and in the house. So if I had to give anyone a tip, it would be to spend more time in nature. If you're in a city, try and get out in the country more. And one of the things that I love to do that's also a very good stress reliever is just to get my bare feet on the ground, and the earth always seems quite happy. It's not like you're putting some sort of bad stuff in there. If it makes you feel better, you can let go of your stress with also a sense of love. But I think the Great Mother's more than capable of handling the little bit of stress that we've built up in our system, and it just feels good. Once you sort of got into a pattern of it, you start to miss having your bare feet on the grass or on the sand. I mean, that's just lovely by the sea. And that's a good way to tune in to the natural world. And I've had some interesting experiences just from doing that. Don't have to go to these sacred sites and pay money to do it.
Yeah, I know. And whenever I go, every year I usually go down to Mexico. And the beaches there are just filled with crystal and granite, the sand. Mm. And so you walk and it's almost like you're getting a foot massage. When you walk, and I would get up, you know, early in the morning, and I would do I'd do some Qigong practices and things like that, and then go for a walk, long walk down the beach and back again, and you know, and then go, you know, get some breakfast or get something to eat, and then I would end my day with the same thing, and it was amazing. I was just getting. Yeah, I was getting higher in a kite down there, but I was also healing. It was amazing because all of this healing energy was coming. I mean, I was just letting go of everything I had to deal with, you know, all year long here. And, you know, it was a major rejuvenation process. And so, and we do that here in the summertime here. It's kind of hard to walk in bare feet in the snow here, although – I know Khan, one of the guy teachers here, doesn't have any problem with that, but he just melts the snow as he goes. But it's interesting. But we have a walk around the field. We call it the Field of Dreams, and we walk around the field and we focus on what we want to manifest or create. And it's amazing. You can just walk right out of your diseases, your aches and pains and other things. You know, we've had some pretty amazing healings happen here.
Yeah. You know, hopefully I'll be able to see a bit more before I leave.
Yeah, definitely get your shoes, get your feet on the ground here and do a walk. And just, you know, you can call them intention walks or focus walks or whatever, you know, whatever you're working on, it seems to manifest. You know, it's quite interesting how things, and, you know, I need to actually do more of it. I always tell people to do it, you know.
Yeah.
And people do it and have amazing results, and I'm busy doing all these other things. I need to really set more time aside, you know, for my own healing.
Yeah, we can all certainly be guilty of that. I normally try and buy myself, when I'm at home, at least 15 minutes just to go out and get my bare feet on the ground. And it certainly always benefits me afterwards. That's for sure.
Yeah, the you know, I was wondering, the you've got quite a few tours coming up. Is there still room on those tours? And what's the best way for people to get in touch with you if they want to join these tours?
Thanks. Yeah, well, I'm certainly working on a lot of tours, because what we didn't mention is the way I got into all of this research is by representing a lot of authors. Connected with ancient history and wisdom, so I tend to go out on tours with them a lot. The next tour that I'll be on is a cruise with Robert Laval that he's running to Egypt. We're going to do a 16-day cruise down the Nile, and that's October this year. I'm co-hosting a lot of tours in 2013, so we'll be going to Malta, some interesting sites there connected to sound, Turkey. We're going to be going back to Egypt in April 2013, waiting on some dates for Peru. I'll probably be going off to the Chinese pyramid. So there's plenty going on. Depends where people feel called to. But if it's an ancient site, I'm probably working on it. So the best way for people to connect with me and find out everything that I'm up to, the conferences and tours and interviews, is on Facebook. And that would be Infinite Connections PR. That would be, I've got a group on there with a lot of people in it. We've got some good conversations going on and sharing. So yeah, look me up, Gary Evans on Facebook, and I'll add you to the group.
Great. And you know, I think it's amazing too, the way you're going about these a lot of these tours and getting people to, you know, get the full benefit of these tours, you know, not just by, you know, embracing them on an ego level, you know, and
yeah,
taking all the snapshots back home, but actually to really, you know, feel the presence there at each one of these sites and the different energies and to actually embrace them spiritually.
Well, the whole reason I think I'm connected to tours in the first place is because, first of all, I really do care about people. It's not just a saying it. There is certainly a part of me that wants to help people.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's more of a sort of facilitator. My Egyptian friend called me a sort of space holder. But it's not about Gary talking to you at an ancient site. We can have discussions before or after. But these ancient sites talk to us in a far, far deeper way than I've ever had a person explain them to me. They come in on a real sort of deep intuition or soul level. So it's getting people safely to these power places and then allowing them to have the experience they want to. And of course, lots of people want to have mementos of that. But I kind of introduced a system of photographs on the way in, give yourself an opportunity to connect, see what you can feel at the site, and then take some photos as you leave. So that's my kind of compromise solution.
Mm-hmm.
So you can experience everything you want to and have some memories to take home.
Yeah, I think that's so important because we get so caught up with, you know, documenting the experience and showing our friends and family that we actually miss the experience, you know, and what these sacred sites really have to offer.
That's for sure. And I realize it's a difficult compromise for people. And some people are just happy with that kind of experience. Maybe they get what I get through a different way, and it's not my place to judge them. So we have all different types of people on the tours, and the people that are interested in the kind of meditation or quiet time, that's normally the group of people that I'm with.
Yeah, you can't just lock them in the King's Chamber for a little while and then come back, you know, 3 days and see how they're all doing.
We haven't tried it yet.
Hey, well, I'll sign up for that tour.
I won't roll it out.
Yeah, I tell you, I would sign up for that tour right away, you know, because that's something that's on my bucket list. You know, I definitely want to sit inside that resonance chamber that some people call the sarcophagus and and do some toning, you know, just as you did. I mean, that's what blew me away, the toning that you were doing in that chamber and the way the sound was building on itself.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, and that's exactly what these pyramids are doing. The energy coming off of the top of these pyramids actually is building exponentially as it goes out. So there's some real powerful sound technology built into those chambers and those pyramids. And I think, as you were saying too, people really need to do more research in that direction.
Yeah, Egypt definitely pushed me in the direction of sound use at sacred sites, because we've got a lot of resonant buildings and structures. And the King's Chamber is just incredibly sensitive to sound. You can hear a footstep in the Grand Gallery 100 feet below you. And, and once I've tuned in into perhaps there is something to do with vibration, toning on effects on the body, sound healing. I've seen a similar pattern in Peru. There's a very interesting site we discussed earlier. And I've also found evidence of it in the Stonehenge environment as well. So it seems to have been a global understanding at least 4,000 to 5,000 years ago, and it's still something that we can use today in our daily practice. So that's a good thing. There's practical uses.
Yeah, I agree. I think we really need to do some research into that and start implementing it into our daily lives. You know, who knows? You know, we might have some pretty incredible finds there as far as healing technologies and, you know, enlightenment, you know, to go along with the package.
Well, that sounds like a good deal to me. I'll sign up for that one.
Yeah. Hey, well, anyway, we're running up to the end of the hour, so I've got to sign off now. So,
Okay, thanks for having me.
Can't thank you enough for coming on the show. And again, the best way to get a hold of you is just to go to Facebook, Gary Evans.
Yes, Infinite Connections PR, and you'll find my group, and I'll add you if you make a request. Yes, so thanks for having me on the show, James. It was a pleasure.
All right. Well, keep up the great work, and who knows, maybe I'll see you in Egypt.
Yeah, hope so. Good to see you there.
All right. Take care.
Thanks a lot, you too. Bye.
All right. This is James Gillen signing off for the first hour. But we are going to come back again for the second hour, and I've got Mel Fabregas coming up. And this is another amazing guest. And if anybody doesn't know Mel, he's Veritas Radio. So stay tuned for the second hour. Greetings. I'm your host, James Gillen. We've got another great show. We've got Mel Fabregas with Veritas Radio on the show. And Mel's going to be joining us here at the SETI Ranch for the June 29th through May 2nd event. And send us an email if you want to find out more about that. Send it to esetireservations@gmail.com or esetticustomerservice@gmail.com. And Mel's been with us for quite a while now. He's had some amazing experiences up at the ranch, and hopefully we can bring him out and talk a little about what he's been up to and some of his experiences at the ranch. Mel, are you with us?
I'm with you, James. Hello. Always a pleasure being with you.
Yeah. I wanted to let people know this is our second attempt because it's just hilarious. We were just talking about how the powers that were like to mess with our recording instruments, and our first attempt at recording, Mel disappeared off the air, and I could hear him through my headphones, but there was nothing being recorded. Quite interesting. And the equipment worked flawlessly up to then, and it's all brand new equipment. So kudos to them. They're pretty tricky. Keep it up, guys. Your karma is increasing.
Maybe they'll learn something today.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, it's great having you on the show. And we were talking a little bit earlier about how both of us have been experiencing pretty crazy interference in trying to interview some of the guests that we have on our shows. And it seems like right when we get to a major event or some major breakthrough that they want to let out, bam, the equipment just goes haywire.
It happens. It happens to me quite frequently, and sometimes we use telephones, sometimes we use Skype, sometimes we use something else, and it doesn't matter. They are able to. For example, I remember years ago I interviewed Paul LaViolette one of many times, and as we were talking about how to create an anti-gravity machine at home, all that audio, I don't know how, it was surgically removed. Just that question. The rest was allowed. Well, we were disconnected 25 times, but this was not a disconnect. This was actually a surgically removed piece of the audio. So just before we were saying this, when we tried to connect for the first time today, I was saying how wonderful that we can actually talk almost as if we're in the studio and your new equipment. It's wonderful. I can hear you perfectly. And we can press a button and talk to somebody across the world. So technology, you have to love it and sometimes you have to hate it.
Yeah, it has a way of enlightening people and suppressing people at the same time. And I guess it's all up to the user and the consciousness of the people behind the technology.
That's right. And recently I saw a video talking about this, and I've been mentioning this, James, a lot during my show in the past few months, how I'm a bit concerned with this marriage of technology. You know, if you look back at the ancient times, we think of the indigenous people. We call them soulless savages. Mm-hmm. But they seem to be the ones who created the best technology as it relates to archaeology, architecture. And they seem to be in touch with nature. In our case, we seem to be removing ourselves more and more from nature and even from people. This marriage of technology, I wonder if there's a second phase that will be taking place soon where, you know, you probably have heard the term singularity, where we're going to be marrying this technology and we're going to be upgraded, you know, the whole chip implant. And but I just don't want to go the doom route.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of stories about that. And unfortunately, some of the very top speakers have actually promoted this transhumanism and see it as a good thing. And I've also seen they actually talk about eugenics as a good thing as well. So, I'm kind of wondering just who these people are and who's sponsoring them when I hear them, you know, talking about these things. And, it's just quite interesting, the whole paradigm going on right now. And I think people are wising up to who's who, you know, despite the facades that they're putting out.
Yes, I think there's an unveiling taking place. You hear people talk about certain topics. All of a sudden, they talk about transhumanism, which is the new term for what's the word I want to use? James, help me out.
Like a technical evolution or something? Or
yeah, pretty much. Just what Nazi Germany used to do and right now is just using technology. So in the future, if you have a company and you want to hire 20 people, you're going to hire 20 people who have the upgrade. And the rest, what, slaves? So people are advocating for this.
Yeah, it's like the Borg, you know. The Borg are here, and they're just now starting to do their deeds, you know, and the Borg are us, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I have really high hopes for the future. I know from my own inner guidance and information I've been getting in that, you know, we are going to go through a real, you know, some rough times and a real rocky road here in the future, but it's on the path to something much grander. And I do see the energies that are not aligned with unity consciousness and that, you know, the tyranny consciousness and the me consciousness and the greed and separation game, you know, I do see all of those just imploding. And I think we're in the middle of that implosion process.
I think so too. And like you, I'm an optimist by nature. At the same time, we cannot hide under a rock. There's dire news coming, you know, on a daily basis, and we have to also discuss those because without knowing what to do, if we completely put ourselves under a rock, and forget about the things that are bad, we won't be able to improve them. So it's important to discuss both, but to be optimists, because we have the choice. We have the way in which we can make a better world.
Yeah, I agree. You know, there's so many people out there, and people call them they have different names for them, you know, the woo-woo airy fairies. And, you know, part of me fits into that category because I do have, you know, pretty unlimited, I guess, mind, you might say, that can go out there and explain, you know, and experience those other planes and dimensions. But the message I get from these higher planes and dimensions is that, you know, we have to get off our butts and do our part, you know, on this level. And I think it's sad that there are a lot of people out there that are giving people the feel-good message that don't worry, everything's going to be done for you. You know, all you have to do is focus on love and peace, and the whole world's just going to be shifted, and you don't have to do anything.
Now, you see, this is the part where I completely differ. I understand that you have to love and you have to embrace the positive energies, but at the same time, I don't think anybody's going to do anything for you. We have to get off our butts and do it ourselves. As a matter of fact, somebody sent me a video. I get videos every single day, but this morning somebody sent me a video called Get Off Your Knees. That was the title. Uh-huh. And it basically showed a sheep getting off the herd and fighting the sheepdog, basically saying, we're not going to take it anymore. And it really sent a clear message to me saying, there's only one sheepdog. Everybody else is a sheep. If everybody started realizing that we are being manipulated by the sheep herder and the sheepdog, and we confront them, they can't win. It's such a simple, simple way of thinking.
Yeah, it is. I know one of the things that I've seen over and over again is that the you know, powers that were the elite actually are controlling both sides, and it's amazing how, you know, they control the right and they control the left, and now the left is the right on steroids. You know, so our illustrious president, basically, and you know, he's Bush's dream child, basically. But you know, you look at what's, you know, you hear them say one thing, and they're very charismatic, and they tell you everything you want to hear, everything you want to need to hear. You know, politicians, and you know, some new age people too will tell you everything you want to hear. And give you the feel-good message, but it's a half message, and it usually has an agenda behind it, other than really serving the people and telling you what you need to hear.
Exactly. I think polarity is the word here. I used to say duality, but it's polarity, because if you look at the message, whether it's left or right, it's always the same. It's always attacking the other side. This is what keeps people separated, and you know, the whole divide and conquer.
Yeah.
If you and I sat down with most American people, and I bet you it doesn't even happen in the United States. This left and right paradigm happens in Europe, happens in many other countries. If we sat down with a regular person and talk about what matters to them, you'll find that you have so much more in common. And you'll discover that this separation is done on purpose, because the more you separate a community, the more they can be manipulated. And I think that's the bottom line.
Yeah, I was looking at this. One of the issues is chemtrails, and I was looking at the issue of chemtrails, and I've been working very hard on the chemtrails since the early 90s, actually, when they first started appearing on the horizon, and doing research into it, and actually going on the local TV station here and kind of giving people a heads up, you know, upon which I got a low-level spraying of some stuff that was so toxic it almost killed the chickens. It actually paralyzed the chickens for a while and killed a couple of them. But, you know, that was the old days. They're a little more clandestine now about it. You know, they're doing them at 10,000 feet on up. But I think it's interesting that if you take this issue, let's say chemtrails, up with the politicians, basically they won't even touch it. It doesn't exist for them. They won't look at the evidence. They won't have anything to do with it. You take it to the military, and they're on orders from higher-ups, and it's, you know, top secret. They're not going to talk about it. You go to the EPA, and they're saying, oh, no, it's not happening. You know, those are just contrails. And again, they won't look at the evidence because they've been bought and sold. So you say, okay, you know what? I'm going to take this to Greenpeace, and I'm going to take it to the Sierra Club, you know. And And then you look at the backers for these guys, you know, and it's like Merck and PBS Radio. Is Merck is the biggest backer, it's one of the biggest drug companies. See Shell Oil backing the Sierra Club. You know, you just see all these people are backed by these huge mega corporations. And then you ask them about the chemtrails, and they won't touch it with a 10-foot pole.
And this is – go ahead.
Yeah, and you look at this thing and go, I think eventually people are going to have to wake up to the fact that they control the left, the right, and the biggest agencies, you know, both the environmental impact agencies and the environmental clubs. They control all of it right now.
Chemtrails, I have to tell you, when I started Veritas, I had a top 10 list of topics that I was most concerned about. Mm-hmm. And chemtrails was there, but it keeps rising and rising. And I have to tell you, in the past couple of months, almost all the time, I've asked my guests, what's your take on chemtrails? And I have to tell you, only one, and that was David Icke, who started talking about how curious it is that these planes just fly one day, the next day they don't fly. So he was totally aboard with us. But most of the other researchers that we respect all were saying that this is just bunk, that this is just a crazy conspiracy theory, and that there's no foundation about it. And honestly, my mouth almost dropped. Somebody whose research, I'm not going to name names, anybody can listen to my shows and realize who I'm talking about, but people that I admire their work and their research, that they do not look into this and see that these are definitely not condensation trails, and that there are independent laboratories that have analyzed the water and the soil and have shown barium, strontium, aluminum. And if we, as you mentioned, the drug companies, I mean, what is aluminum? It creates people develop Alzheimer's. What is strontium? It gives you cancer. What is barium? It takes the potassium away from you, so you get heart conditions. So, and now PBS being backed by all these companies, people talk about a new world order coming. I think the new world order has been here for a long time, and it's called a corporation. It's not fascism. It's got a corporatocracy, what's taking place, and people don't see it. I mean, look at the BP oil spill. Who were the first ones to respond? It was not our government. It was BP themselves. And it's almost as if our government was taking orders from the corporation.
Yeah, it seems like the government, the military, everybody, we're all taking orders from BP, and basically they just pretty much invaded our shores and took over, you know, the whole shoreline and towns and everything else. And, you know, all the local authorities just had to step back and put up with it.
Yes, yes. And just like BP, of course, we have to do whatever we have to do to protect the Queen's interest. But you mentioned, you know, the drug companies. I remember when I moved to Arizona, I had to go and audit MDA, Muscular Dystrophy Association. Mm-hmm. And I, all my life as a kid, Catholic school, I was ordered, not told, ordered to go during the weekend, you know, the Jerry Lewis telethon, mm-hmm. to go and collect money from them in the middle of the summer. And I always found it, you know, every single year, there's so many millions of dollars, but what's happening here? And then when I moved to Arizona and I was told to go to that building, it is the most expensive building in the county. And most managers earn over $150,000. This is back in 1996 or 97. And when I asked them to provide their financial statements, they refused. And I said, excuse me, you cannot refuse. This is a nonprofit organization. And all these cancer, AIDS, all these I don't want to sound as if I don't want to cooperate with a cure. I understand that. But I take it, my discovery is that a lot of this is just a hamster running on the wheel, going on forever and never finding a cure, because cures are not profitable, just like free energy is not profitable.
Well, I know if you had a cure for diabetes, they would have your head in moments. And there are cures out there. There's a lot of people that have been curing diabetes. Cancer as well. I've worked with physicists that have cured every form of cancer on the planet, and they just did it through formulas and through you know superoxygenating the blood and raising the pH, which backs cancer right out of the system. And this is stuff that was given by Otto Warburg. I think he was a triple PhD. He was a triple Nobel Prize winner. And he gave us, I think in 1929, the cure for cancer. He said cancer's anaerobic. You know, you raise the blood oxygen, raise the pH. You know, it has to have an acidic environment to function. And oxygen just eats cancer. So, you know, the cure is there. But it does seem like there's a mass effort through all the chemicals in the food, the fluoride in the water, the bonding of all the other chemicals in the water and everything else to create cancer. And there's actually no movement at all to really cure it, you know, other than these new products that are going to come out 5 years in the future. They always say that, oh, yeah, we've got it. We've almost got it. We just need more money. And after 5 years of testing, you know, we'll get the okay from the FDA.
Of course. I mean, just you have to look at all these companies that the so-called finding a cure. They're publicly traded companies. Mm-hmm. If you tell the shareholders, we have found the cure for something, you know what would happen to the stock. So they can't let that happen. So to me, this is all planned obsolescence. You remember how in the 30s and 40s, people would have their refrigerators, appliances, even cars that would I know people who have refrigerators from the 40s that are still in better shape than the ones you buy today. So it's planned obsolescence. You know, yes, granted, we are living longer than before, some say, but they don't allow you to go out there for alternative cures. Only the very powerful or the informed, like you and some of the people who listen to us, can go out there and get these I don't want to say the word cures because I don't want the FDA behind my back, but these alternative sources. You know, you hear Pamela Anderson, who developed hepatitis a few years ago, and that's incurable. Well, all of a sudden, she got cured. And when you ask her, Pamela, what happened here? How did you get cured? Oh, God did it. So apparently, she is told what to say because she cannot say, oh, I went to so-and-so to get cured, because you'll know what happened to that person. I spoke to somebody years ago in one of my businesses. All of a sudden, we were talking about alternative cures. She was in the United States, in continental United States, and she was able to cure her daughter of muscular dystrophy. Well, she started spreading the message, and the FDA came after her. She had to leave the country. She now lives in Alaska. And she basically gave me a lot of information, and I wish I could get a hold of her, because this is what I want now. For the past few years, I was drinking reverse osmosis water, thinking that this was the best thing in the world. Didn't realize that it causes the pH of your body to go to be acidic.
Yeah.
So I bought some meters recently, a pH meter and another one that measures the electricity in my body. And now I bought myself an alkalizer, a water alkalinity alkalizer, and it also provides oxygen to the water. And I can't believe it. In less than 2 weeks, my pH level went through the roof.
Yeah. Yeah, it is amazing. People don't realize that. You know, water basically has incredible properties. You can entrain it with energy and consciousness, and you know, water is the basis of life on this planet. But you know, pure water, if you can get water that, not surface water, water that's gone underground and picked up all the minerals and been filtered and that comes back up, really good spring water is what you want to get, because it has all the elements and the minerals and even some live bacteria that you do need, your body does need. And people don't realize when you drink distilled water or reverse osmosis water, it's actually dead water, and your body doesn't like it. And I've done a lot of research into this because I worked for 7 years with a biophysicist, and he actually took water and created it into a microhydrant and infused it with crystallized oxygen, so he can raise the oxygen levels up to 1,000% in water. And it's not – people go, well, you can't do that because water is H2O. Well, that's true. You know, if you just put oxygen into water, you open the lid and you hear a psst and it's gone. you know, it's gone. But if you crystallize it and suspend it in the water and you reform the water into a microhydrant, then you've got something that that has all the minerals that you need in it as well. Then you have live water that's going to oxygenate the blood and raise the pH and actually go after any viruses or bacteria or even cancer, because cancer is anaerobic and oxygen is the highest systemic antibiotic you can get.
That's right. And recently I remember a story you told me when I bought this machine. about a month or two ago. The first night I couldn't sleep. The first couple of nights I couldn't sleep, and I wonder why. I was so energized. And that just showed how when you just infuse your body with oxygen in the water, it has such a powerful effect, you know, losing weight, gaining energy, and just by the water that you drink. And I used to have water in plastic before. And then I interviewed Betty Martini. One of my guests who told me that you have to have your water in glass. Dr. Sherry Tempenny, to put your water into glass. And it's incredible how small changes in your life can make such a big difference. You told me that you were drinking that water, and one time you had to drive overnight to a conference, and you didn't even sleep because you had the water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had that, and I actually had the crystallized oxygen pills. I drove from Washington State to Laughlin, Nevada for the International UFO Congress, and I drove all the way through there, and it took about 17, 18 hours to get there, and then I stayed up all night and hung out with a lot of the speakers. We're at the restaurant there, and little combination bar restaurant, and I walk by and they go, "Hey, James." And so I said, "Oh yeah, what's up?" You know, they go, "I just got in." They go, you know, they asked me, "How long you've been driving?" I said, 17 hours. Huh. And they go, "Well, you need to go to bed." And I go, "No, I feel great." You know, so I went and hung out with them for a while.
Now, as you see, when you talk to people, the mainstream, about this and the fact that cancer is anaerobic and many other diseases are, and you tell them that you can actually cure it, and you can actually find ways to address it without having to go through chemo or radiation, they just say to you, "Wait a minute, I've never seen this on TV. If it's not on TV, it must not be true, James."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is sad, you know, because they want the rubber stamp on there, but they don't realize that in order to get that rubber stamp, you know, if you do come up with a cure, you'll never get the rubber stamp because, you know, the ones that own the rubber stamp don't want the cure to come out, and it's just a no-brainer that you know, I just see all over the world, I see people having you know, here we have people that have spontaneous healings, and it's very well documented. One doctor came here from Japan and went through one of the transpersonal release sessions, and he had big thick glasses on, and he went to walk out of the room and he couldn't see. He goes, "I can't see, I'm blind." And the woman with him, she goes, "Take your glasses off." And she pulls her glasses off, and he goes, "I see perfectly." You know, and he couldn't see through his glasses was the problem, that he went through this transformation. I'm not saying this happens all the time, because it doesn't. You know, it's up to the individual as to what they're open to, and it's between them and the universe what happens. But we've seen, you know, broken limbs mend overnight. We've seen tumors disappear, you know, ulcers just stop. There's just all kinds of crazy things happen here, you know, on a regular basis. But really, it's just that there is a field of dreams here, and when people get out there and they ask and they're sincere, you know, sometimes magic happens.
I think the biggest conspiracy of all is the secret that prevents us from knowing our true potential. I think that our mind has much more power. And when we think of our minds, we think of our brains mostly. But I think the mind is throughout the body, even, you know, cell memory. I have a friend who passed away a couple of years ago, but he had a heart transplant. He was in his 60s. And the heart transplant came from a young man who died in a car accident. He was 22. And all of a sudden, he started developing taste for food that he never liked before, you know, spicy food. All of a sudden, he would listen to rap, which he hated. He loved classical music and country. And then he would start tapping on the floor. And he called the deceased man's family and asked, "Did your son like this and that?" And they say, "Absolutely, he loved it." So I think cell memories everywhere. We can actually, with our minds, in my opinion, we can affect change, not only exterior, but to our bodies. I remember years ago, I listened to what's called the Silva Method back many, many years ago when I thought this was all New Age BS. But now I wish that my mind was in the right place back then, because all those teachings of, you know, thinking, if you have a pain in your teeth, to think, to be able to fix the problem. If you have a tumor, imagine the tumor shrinking every day. And a lot of people who have experienced this become cancer-free, become tumor-free just by doing that. It's just that most people do not believe that they have the ability of doing that.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting when you look at all the modern-day physics, you know, where they're talking about is without the observer, mass doesn't exist. and nothing exists without the observer. That's what they keep running into this program. Well, if you think about it, if we're blinking in and out something like 14 times a second between a wave and a particle, and other people have different numbers for that, but you know, the bottom line is you're recreating yourself, you know, 14 times a second. And if you could slow that process down and hold the thought of a different creation of a whole and healthy, perfect self, I think miracles could happen, but it's just learning the practices to do that.
I wonder, James, what you just said, it just takes the word concentration away from me, because the way you see it now, you turn on the TV and what do you see? If you turn on the news, it's so bombastic. It's so quick. You have all the little words coming from left, from right to left, and it catches your attention so quickly that people, especially the young ones, nothing satisfies them unless they get immediate gratification. And they cannot specialize in something because they're putting so much information out there that people cannot focus. And I think this is part of the plan, to keep everybody not learning our true potential.
You know, I think it is too. And I think TV is the master enslaver. I know in about some, you know, mid, early 70s, I pretty much threw my TV set out the window. And people ask me, they go, you need to stay informed. You know, what if you don't know when the next terrorist attack is going to happen, or this or that? And, you know, it's really weird. And I said, you know, now with the internet, you can pick and choose what you want to look at and what you want to read. And, you know, with the TV, it's all programmed. They're choosing what they want you to know about and what they want you to believe and see. And with the internet being international, you can get both sides of the story now and find out, you know, the truth about what's really going on. And I think that's a godsend in a way. Just the instant communication and the global network that we have, where we can actually, you know, get to the truth of these matters and find out, you know, what's really going on versus what we're told is going on.
Granted that with the advent of the internet, there's also going to be COINTELPRO. There's going to be people out there trying to say that. I mean, I hear from some of my guests, they talk about their new findings, they put it on a forum all of a sudden, or even on YouTube, and all of a sudden somebody creates a new account on YouTube just to debunk what they're saying. So we have to be very careful. But yes, it makes you wonder also why the government was so gung-ho in giving people their digital boxes, even if they couldn't afford it. I wonder what the digital signal really does, because as you may know, the television in Germany, one of the things is that the waves that are emitted from the TV is the equivalent of the waves that are transmitted in a mother's womb when she's pregnant to pacify the baby. So in less than 60 seconds, it's almost, I call it the subliminal tube for a reason, because the moment you turn on that TV, it only takes 1 minute for you to be in that zone, exactly what they want you to be programmed.
Yeah, that's why they call it the boob tube. <You know? laughs> I wouldn't be surprised. But, to get the suckling, nurturing energy of the mother, you know, programmed into you so you'll believe anything that comes down that pipeline. It's pretty crazy. I've noticed, too, that with all these cable systems and everything else, those TVs go both ways. And so they can actually listen in and in some cases even view you anytime they want. And see what you're talking about or what you're doing. A lot of the computers, they can do that now. That's been released. I guess there's been a lot of insiders talking about how, you know, people with their, you know, their different types of phones with cameras on them and listening devices or whatever, that they can activate those at any time and listen or observe, you know, what's going on in your bedroom, basically.
That's right. That's right. And that's an area of concern with technology. So many people who leave their Wi-Fis open to anybody. I have one of my brothers who was asked in the neighborhood if he wanted to be part of a neighborhood FBI training center. I mean, during the whole terrorism, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, he accepted. And they taught him, like, look, this is some of the things that can be done. If you have a neighbor who has Wi-Fi, you can actually upload pictures, any kind of pictures that could put that neighbor in trouble. You can actually accuse the neighbor of having those pictures. He never did it, but somebody can do it. So there are ways to damage, you know, people like you and I with stuff that we've never done. So anybody who's listening out there, if you have a Wi-Fi, please make sure that you have a very protected password and nobody around you can use your access to have access to your computers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they definitely have all kinds of toys. You know, from my understanding is talking to some of the people, I know you've had some pretty eloquent guests that insiders that know what's going on, is that they can actually do it from a satellite, or they can fly a helicopter over your place and have full access to your computer, and you know, or park a van, you know, with a dish on it, and which we've seen around here actually. And you know, I tell you a funny story. I had David Farnsworth here. He's the grandson, I think, of Philo T. Farnsworth, which actually created the television set. And he had his gear up here and all of his equipment and oscilloscopes and antennas and everything. And he was monitoring the full bandwidth of all the energies and what's happening here. And he says, "Wow, you've got something coming down overhead, and it's not a good energy." You know, he was measuring the frequencies, and he said, "You also have something coming in from that hill over there." And we got some binoculars, and we're looking up on the hill, and we see this gray van up there with a dish on it, out in the middle of nowhere in the forest, you know, up on this hill. And so as soon as we said that, you know, I said, "We should go up there and see what these guys are doing and check it out." And as soon as we said that, you know, within like 2 minutes, that van was packed up and gone. And not even 2 minutes, you know, we were sitting there watching it, and we go, "Wow, they're packing up and leaving." So they were listening, you know, to everything going on here. And he also said, "You know, you've got every frequency going on here. You have every agency, you know, in the area, in this small little town, broadcasting." You know, he said, he goes, what's up with that? You know, you know, like this. So it's kind of interesting, but we've actually had most of the agencies come to the ranch and actually see what's going on here and realize it's benevolent and that it's good and there's nothing to fear. And actually there's times when they actually try to find out who these guys are because they can't make contact with these higher dimensional beings.
And I have to say, you know, people accuse the triple letter agencies of being bad. There's good and bad everywhere, folks. I've met people from the CIA. I've met people from the FBI, and they have some good people there. However, who do they work for? When you have the regulators work for the companies, you have people that work for the government or work for the for Merck, for example, and all of a sudden become the director of the FDA. Something's wrong there. But you know, at your ranch, you have so many people listening, probably because it's a threat in a way, because you have people who talk about alternative cures. You have people who talk about free energy. You have people who talk about extraterrestrial life. This is very contradictory to what the powers that want to be want to keep the secret. And when I was there this last time, you may remember this, at 1:30 in the morning, you may remember this, James. That my whole room shook, and I said to myself, "What is going on here?" So I get out of the room, and there was a Chinook helicopter at 1:30 in the morning, parked over us for about 10 minutes. I didn't even bring my camera out. I didn't bring my recorder out because I was just dumbfounded. What is this thing doing over us in a private property in the middle of the night? Why are they doing this? And thank God for John Kelly. He was there. He always documents everything. My first UFO, he documented because I couldn't. The Chinook, he documented because I couldn't. Why are these helicopters visiting your place and some of the others?
Yeah, it's obvious. Yeah, if nothing's happening here, why are they all looking into it? You know, I think it's kind of hilarious when you think about it. You know, we've got just phenomenal footage of these black helicopters and some that look like Black Hawks with gear on them that nobody can explain. I mean, I have people in the Air Force. I have Air Force base commanders that have come up here, and you know, I showed them this picture, and they go, "Yeah, we know who those are. I can't really talk about it." He said, "Only thing I can tell you is that, you know, we have to stay a certain, you know, distance away from them when they come in, and they get out, they fuel themselves, and they take off, and it's you know, we don't need to know anything." He goes, "We don't know who they are or anything. All we know is that when they have carte blanche, and we're not supposed to go anywhere near these helicopters."
Honestly, this is going to sound like science fiction to some people.
Yeah.
But what I think is happening here, when I saw the helicopter there, I thought, first of all, if they're here to scare us, I don't think anybody's scared. I'm looking at them and I'm thinking, unless you have a missile pointing at my face, I'm not scared. At the same time, I wonder if they think because of your place and what we talk about and the people who go there, I've seen people who are, I don't want to say strange, but very different, that go to conferences. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I think, I wonder if they're not from this neighborhood, if you know what I mean. If they have a way to detect from those helicopters, if there's one of them, you know, if they, everybody, you and I, we emit a signature, a heat signature. It makes you wonder if somebody who may be from outside of their of this neighborhood may be at your ranch and they're looking just to identify them.
I think that's definitely true. And also, I think when you get a group together and you're doing some powerful work, you know, some healing or transformational work or sending healing to Japan or somewhere else that's going through crisis, you know, they that puts out a signature and they pick it up. And it's funny, whenever we have events here or just do private clearing work, you know, that nobody knows about, you know, all of a sudden these guys show up and they're cruising the area trying to find out, you know, what's going on and find out where that energy signature came from. So, yeah, they're definitely monitoring, you know, energy signatures and shifts and changes, you know, in the fields here. And I think they're trying to figure it out, you know, as much as everybody else, you know, and as what's going on, you know, and basically we would tell them what's going on. We don't have anything to hide here. You know, I figure they need education as well.
That's right, and that's probably why you get the visit from some of us. If you had, you know, people from Boeing, you have people from showing free energy devices there. Mm-hmm. I think that, that is what makes them worried. Because imagine, if something like this were to happen, I can see how so many thousands of people would fear that their industries will be completely fractured. And this is the part that I sometimes wonder. I have to put my hat on and say, okay, it's great to have free energy. It's great to have free cures. But what would happen to all those people who are employed? Sometimes the planet, like a dog with fleas, has to shake it. And it may not be pleasant. But like today, I was reading the news. I was reading of what's happening in Greece. Greece is going to implode. Mm-hmm. At the same time, you have a country like Estonia, which has the euro, which is completely profitable, has, you know, it does not have any debt. Everybody's happy. And you wonder why some can and why some cannot.
Mm-hmm. You know, it is interesting. I've also seen, too, is that, you know, I just see money as, you know, basically they're just little green pieces of paper or whatever color they put on them. And it's the belief, you know, and the people, you know, what they put into it and their values and things like that. And I think when people get really greedy and fall for the debt trap that's laid out for them, you know, when the jaws close, they get definitely chewed up and spit out. And that is the plan, to totally collapse, you know, an economic system so you can come in and buy everything out for a penny on the dollar and then start over again. So it's a, you know, build up the sheep, get them nice and fat, you know, get the wool, and then fleece them, you know, and then go from there and start over. That's the game, and as long as people keep participating in that game, it'll continue.
Absolutely. And a few days ago, I had a very, very good conversation with Neil Kramer, mm-hmm. who's going to be back at eSETI now again this year. So I'm glad that you're having him back. We had a conversation, and we have very similar, and not upbringings, but we both were part of the corporate world. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some people criticized me that I was part of it. But in order for you to deconstruct that whole system, you have to be inside of the belly of the beast, if you will. Mm-hmm. We both were. We can now see how it operated. I was part of it. Years ago, like everybody else, I was buying real estate when the real estate was booming. And now I regret it, like many other people. Mm-hmm. I suffered like everybody else. You know, some people talk about, they give conferences talking about, you know, this and that, and they never worked. They have an endowed, they inherited millions of dollars, and they all of a sudden feel that they have the right to tell us how to live our lives. It's like a priest that gives marriage counseling when they've never been married or had sex. Well, that's debatable, right? But you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean on that last comment. But, yeah. Apparently they've had a lot of sex. Only problem is it might have been with little boys, but that's all coming out in the news. The Yeah, it is interesting. You know, I myself, you know, I was in commercial real estate. I had my own
Right.
office and people working for me, and I was on a board of director in the Chamber of Commerce. You know, I saw how all the inner workings and how corrupt that whole program was, and then I had the drowning. You know, I had the near-death experience, and that shifted me back to what I knew as a child. You know, that and made me ultra sensitive again, and brought back, you know, the basic. The more the sacred senses that we've had, you know, beat out of us. And I agree with you. It's like you will never understand the beast until you walk through its world. You got to walk through its world to understand it, see what it has to offer, see how enslaving all that is, and how you get so programmed, you know, with material acquisition and outer appearances, and to break it, you know, and then you have to bust that, like, and then bust your ego and get back to what's real.
One of the concerns that I have, since you talk about being more sensitive and also sensitive about what we drink and what we eat, one of the biggest concerns I have lately is that they have so much poison in food now. It is just, honestly, it is depressing. For example, I started working out again a few weeks ago, and I was looking for products, you know, whey protein and so on. I cannot find one single pack of protein that does not have sucralose or aspartame. All the chewing gum in the world now has aspartame. It's and now, of course, they're getting away with murder by calling natural flavors and not telling you what is actually there. But, you know, I've always had this thing. When I eat something that has MSG or aspartame or one of these preservatives, I get headaches. And people used to criticize me. Oh, look at you. You're so weak. You're always getting headaches. Maybe my body is smarter than the rest that is telling me not to continue using it. And those who continue consuming that, maybe those are the ones, God forbid, but maybe those are the ones who are going to be waking up in the morning one day that something has developed in their bodies that they shouldn't have had.
You know, I agree with you. I was looking at all the, you know, the fluoride in the water, all the estrogen mimickers that are just in everything now, even in all the plastic bottles and the Cokes and the other things that we're drinking. You know, you look at, you know, the fluoride in the water. I mean, we can go on and on, just all the chemicals that are put in and packaged, you know, processed food. And you look at this and you go, wow. There's an effort here to create nice little neutered zombie robot consumers, and that's what they want to turn us all into, to where our brains aren't really operating right, our immune systems are extremely compromised, we our sexual organs are just turned transgendering, you know. I mean, they're the, you know, even the male sperm count is down to like, what, 25% of what it was back in the 50s. And some people, it's you know, their libido's gone completely, you know, due to all these estrogen mimickers and all these other things. So there does seem to be a major effort, you know, even with the NutraSweet and or the aspartame and everything else. There is a major effort to you know, to actually turn people into neutered zombie robot consumers. It's very clear, and to shorten the lifespan too as well, and you know, a major eugenics program behind all that.
Indeed. You know, if a company wants to put aspartame in a product and they're telling you, I'm fine with that, all right? As long as the consenting adult knows that that is bad and you have the choice of saying yes or no. But when I go to the grocery store and I see fluoridated baby water, and I think, why in the world they're putting fluoride in baby water? They have no teeth, first of all. And that's where I have a problem. You know, when you give the babies and the children all the stuff. I see people in my circle that give their kids Splenda, thinking, oh,
Oh,
Splenda
gosh.
or NutraSweet, because, you know, we don't want our kids to be jumping off the walls with sugar. Let's give them this. And my wife has already told me, you know what? I understand you're trying to save lives here, but we don't want to be looked upon as these people who are trying to religiously, you know, shove through their throats what we believe. So I'm so glad that I have this platform, Veritas, that allows me to transmit this information out there, because I've had so many people emailing me saying, you know what, ever since I listened to you, I have stopped drinking and my life has completely changed. If we can do this with one person, James, we've done our job.
Oh, I agree. I think you've probably done some research into these GMO foods too.
Sure.
I'm blown away at, you know, they give this corn to these rats and their balls turn blue and fall off and they die, you know, and they die soon after, and the cattle are becoming infertile after eating these crops and having all, and they're dying. And I mean, it is such a mess. And you can imagine what that's doing to humans, you know, with the, especially with the soy and the GMO soy having all these severe consequences. But this is all being suppressed, and it seems our government to the highest levels is pushing like crazy these GMO foods, when over in Europe they're banning them right and left and saying, hey, this stuff is deadly, get rid of it.
Today, I just got in the news, there's a $7 billion lawsuit against Monsanto in India. I knew that farmers were committing suicide there, mm-hmm. but I didn't know to what extent. Every 30 minutes, folks, listen to this, every 30 minutes, a farmer commits suicide in India because they're losing their crops to Monsanto. It's just incredible.
And they're, you know, and they're watching their cattle die and all the other things, and they're, you know, it's pretty crazy. You know, I saw them over there using Coca-Cola you know, as a pesticide.
Oh, really?
They said because it's cheaper and it works better. <You know? laughs> And they were just taking Coca-Cola and spraying it on their fields. You know, it's, you know, you think, and then people are drinking this stuff. Okay, what does that tell you? You know, that it'll eat a nail, I think, if you put it in there. But anyway, you know, basically, I think it's all a matter of educating people, people choosing to educate themselves at the same time and having access to that information. And, you know, kudos to India and any other countries that are taking, you know, Monsanto to task. That's what I call
Monsanto. Good.
You know, because they, what they're doing and the amount of lives that they've harmed is just monumental. And you know, this is criminal. They should be treated as such, basically.
When I was telling you that I worked in the belly of the beast, I'll tell you a quick story. Back in 1991, I moved to Florida, and for some reason, I was 23, I was working out, and all of a sudden, I was losing my strength, and I felt really weak, and I really was concerned that I was developing MFs. So I went to the doctor, and the first question she asked me is, tell me what you drink and what you eat. And I said, well, I love Chinese food, so I'll eat Chinese food out every day. And she started laughing, and I'm thinking, why is she laughing? Mm-hmm. I drink a gallon of Diet Pepsi every single day.
Oh, God.
And she said to me, if you continue like this, you'll be dead in just a few years, or you won't make it to 50. Uh-huh. So I stopped immediately. And from that moment on, it was almost a crusade that I was telling people, you know, don't eat this, don't eat that. But anyway, I moved to California, and I had the territory of the Midwest and the West. And I had to travel to St. Louis a few times to visit, guess what? Guess who? Monsanto.
Yes.
I had to work there. And I'm thinking, my God, look at me. I'm working right at the belly of the beast. Mm-hmm. I cannot tell people here, oh, by the way, I know what Rumsfeld did. He tried to pass aspartame and NutraSweet before, and it was not allowed. But then Reagan came along, and he allowed it immediately. So sometimes you have to be part of the system in order for you to be able to deconstruct it.
Mm-hmm. I think it is important and right now, I think it's very important that people who are part of the system to wake up and start standing up and do what's right, you know, for humanity and the earth, and not participate in anything, you know, any of these war industry programs or these GMO food programs or just, you know, just any of this stuff that's creating harm, you know, to humanity, the earth. You know, it's time for us all to stand up, just say, hey, you know, we have the right to eat clean, you know, organic food. We have the right to clean water. You know, we have the right to live a thoroughly loving, joyous life, you know, in peace and freedom. And it's time for humanity to stand up for those rights.
And it makes you wonder what's going to happen with all our soldiers that are coming back, if they will be coming back after we finish these endless wars. But a lot of them are coming with so many medical conditions. Mm-hmm. All the way back to Gulf War I till now, these poor soldiers, they gosh, you know, it's a volunteer force. I get that. And they go there trying to do what they think is best for the country. But they're being experimented upon, vaccines, neurotoxins, and then they come back here. That is the part that concerns me. When they come back to the United States, what's going to happen with them with all these conditions?
Yeah, it's already happening. I mean, the suicide rate, you know, between soldiers is just off the scale right now. And a lot of them have lost their benefits, and they're told that they're crazy when they're exhibiting all of these, all of these symptoms of the side effects of these inoculations and being exposed to all God knows what, you know, in those other places. But, you know, depleted uranium, all that stuff that they've had to deal with. I see people coming back and they're a mess, you know, and the only thing I can tell them to do is, you know, start. You know, you need to just start eating pure food, get out in the sun, get some fresh water, and start meditating and find whatever detox thing you
That's
can
right.
get. You know, get all the heavy metals out of your system and get your immune system boosted up, because you know what you've allowed them to do to you is basically the next war is going to be to save your own life, you know.
That's right. And, you know, veterans are coming back trying to say this is related to the vaccines I got in Iraq or Afghanistan or wherever. And they're just saying, no, you have no way to prove this. So they're denying the medical benefits. And it's sad to also know that one out of every four homeless was part of our military. I mean, this is where we're coming to.
You know, my concern is them waking up and actually finally figuring out what was done to them. And then, you know, a lot of these guys are trained snipers. And,
right.
And you know, eventually, as anything, karma always comes home to roost, you know. And, you know, I don't know how it's going to happen, but, you know, there's going to be a heck of a lot of forgiveness and a lot of reconciliation and compensation to turn this around, or, you know, there's going to be, something really crazy.
Yes, and you're going to have Dean Clifford at East City soon, and I corresponded with him yesterday. He talks about what's legal and what's not legal. Very interesting topics that he deals with. But yes, it makes you wonder if anybody, any soldier that comes out, even after they are discharged, if there's going to be a law that prevents them from talking or from, you know, spreading the news to the rest of the armed forces, because many of them are coming back. You see them in Occupy Wall Street, you see them at Tea Party meetings, you see them everywhere talking about how they were used. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at what happened in Iraq. I mean, I don't want to repeat myself, but were there any weapons of mass destruction? Was Osama bin Laden in Afghanistan? No, he was in Pakistan. That supposedly is our friend, standing where? Supposedly. I think that he died many, many years ago, and he was irrelevant in my opinion, but they used him for the right moment when Obama had his ratings plummet. But, you know, right next to the equivalent of our one of our elite military schools right there in Pakistan. So these people are working together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty obvious. You know, I don't want to end on a light note here. We're running out of time, but, you know, I want to end on a light note. What I'd like to do is talk about some of, you know, if you can share with the audience some of your experience while you're here at ESETI. We just have a few minutes, and then we can definitely plug your show, the Veritas Show, and get people listening to a lot of these amazing guests that you have on your show.
Thank you. Thank you. And by the way, when I talk about all these news, I'm not a doomer, folks. I just tell the truth. I just tell it what it is. But I even mentioned this during the Neil Kramer show the other day. I said, you know, you go to a social gathering, everybody goes there with their guard up because you don't know who you're going to encounter. Well, the opposite happens at the East City Ranch. When I got there for the first time, of course, I didn't know what to expect. Never having seen a UFO, never interacted with the people that go there. But I have to tell you, it was the total opposite. Your guard is down. Everybody there comes for one reason. They want to learn. They want to be more in touch with themselves and, you know, have a very spiritual and a very open experience. And that's exactly what I went through, meeting people from all over the world. We're talking about doctors, attorneys, people from the government, from all walks of life with one common goal. And everybody's there to have fun, to learn. And on my second year, I saw more UFOs than I could count. Mm-hmm. So it happens. So I call it always, it's the Disneyland for ufologists. So I'm so glad that I'm coming back again, James.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be great to have you here. The I know we had fun. I know we were playing around with you. I when we had that big solar event, and I know you got really sunburned last time you were here.
I'm taking a big hat this time.
Yeah, Brooks Agnew and I were actually thanking you for absorbing the entire solar flare that, that hit the planet, because boy, you sure got a sunburn last time you were here. But yeah, we always remind people to, you know, bring a hat, and the sun is not what it used to be, and to realize, you know, we are getting bombarded with one solar flare after another. It's just getting crazy right now. So a lot of energy coming in.
That's right. That's right. And I'm taking a big hat this time. But yeah, even if it's cold, you think that you're not getting burned. But I saw a video of one of your participants there, a film me on video one of his movies. And I saw myself. I couldn't believe it. I was completely – I looked like an alien with my glasses. I white around my eyes and completely dark around it. So, yes, watch it. But, yes, I had such a great experience, and anybody who's listening that can still make it up there, I highly encourage you to do so. It's such a great experience. During the day, you're interacting with the people and seeing the lectures, and at night – we all convene. It's such a great amenity to be there at night and watching what's happening in the sky.
And we have some toys here. We have the third generation night vision goggles, along with some pretty big infrared spotlights, where we can actually light up the orbs and let people see what's happening in the other dimensions. And the orb phenomena here is incredible. I mean, I still have people saying that this is dust, you know, or this is rain, you know, even when it's clear blue skies. But, you know, these are large objects, you know, some are a foot to maybe 8 inches wide, and they're coming in and they're stopping, they're flying against the wind, they're interacting with people. They're exhibiting intelligent behavior far beyond dust. I mean,
let me say that I used to be one of the ones who said that I think that they were dust. But last year, when I saw them following my laser up and down, I knew this is not what I thought.
Yeah, they're very inquisitive, you know. So I think it's pretty hilarious watching this and watching people's reaction to it. I mean, we have staunch scientists coming here, and you know, they just say that's just dust, or that's just and after they get through experiencing and seeing the photographs. And the real time footage of these things flying around, and then look through and see it themselves, they just go, "Oh my God!" You know, and they have to go reformulate their whole belief system after that.
Exactly, exactly.
Especially when a huge ship drops down and powers up and makes a nice turn as it flies away, that really kind of throws their program a monkey wrench.
See, and that's the great thing. When you're standing next to a skeptic, and I am a skeptic, folks. I'm an open-minded skeptic. And the first time I went there, I was a skeptic. And I stood there, and people were looking at me thinking, okay, so you think
Looks like we lost Mel, but right at the end of the hour, thank God. Close this show out and thank Mel, and go to Veritas if you want to check out his radio show. He's got some great guests, and he'll be here at the conference June 29th through the 2nd of July. So check that out too. Send us an email and we'll send the information. Pay attention, and remember, the energy coming through is a feeling. It's not something you're going to see with your eyes. You know, tune into your heart and feel what's going on. We are going through change.